Portions of this program may be pre-recorded.
Is sponsored.
The opinions and statements made by the host and the guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
He's your Godzilla of the truth in America.
Run! It's Godzilla!
No gibberish or nonsense, just common sense. And now back to the John Frederick Show.
Let's get to Christine in Washington, D.C. Christine, you're live.
Hi, John. Wow, that caller was something. What a defense of, you know, Dr. Pizza Man has to be. We have to listen to him because he's so smart. If he's so smart, why didn't he see the signs like everybody else that he's part of the WHO organization? He's part of the administrative state. And this is the financialization of science. That's what's happening here. And this is what, that's what everybody's seeing. If that guy uses the internet all the time, he needs to go back. In late December, China was starting to destroy records. If you remember in the beginning of this, Taiwan went to the World Health Association organization WHO and tried to say, hey, there's a problem, and Taiwan reacted immediately. And that goes into your mask, John. You use the masks at the height of the epidemic. You don't wear them like in Taiwan. They don't wear them forever. When there's a big outbreak, everybody wears them for, you know, a couple months. They're done. They're not wearing them all the time. You don't wear them forever. But the man, you did a good job, and he was pivoting more. But it really bothers me that we're supposed to listen to this doctor because he's so smart.
Well, I'm done with him, okay? The guy, my argument against Dr. Fauci is he's a deep state, Hillary Clinton-loving, big-money bureaucrat. That's all he is. I don't care what where he graduated from or what his degrees are. And he's been wrong on everything. He was wrong on his modeling. He was wrong when it first started. He said there was nothing to worry about. He was wrong in investing $7.5 million of your money into this Wuhan lab. He was wrong when he said the risks are worth the potential pandemic. Everything the guy has said has been wrong. He was wrong about hospital beds, wrong about ventilators, wrong about the IFR rate. Guy's been wrong about everything down the pike. And what infuriates me, this guy serves at the pleasure of this administration, okay? He serves the administration. We have a president that we elected. And so you have to have communications protocol or this chaos. That's why this thing is a disaster. Trump says something, Fauci runs off the White House Brady room, runs right over to CNN and disputes everything he says. I mean,
and those stories that came out yesterday, it said he was for this thing of taking bats and experimenting with the genetic code and linking it to humans back in 2011. Obama dropped funding this stuff in the Wuhan lab. The Obama administration did. And it got brought back, and I guess by this doctor, because he was in charge of it all, under a secret panel. So I guess this money is approved at NIH, right, that we're going to spend all this different money for this medical research, right? And he was in charge of it and got it put in December of 2017. And they called it a secret panel in, you know, the article of the Washington Examiner yesterday. It's like, what, we got secret courts? We got secret panels spending our money? And he's in charge of all this. So you're right. Someone has to be held accountable on our end. I mean, Taiwan, there's an article out there where Taiwan responded to this at the end of December. Why did Taiwan and not the United States of America were smarter? Because you know what in the very beginning came out? It was all stories about iPhone, right? Well, we can't hurt them and their company. We can't hurt the supply chains. I don't know what his deal is, but you're right. Somebody has to be fired for this. Someone has to be held. Government's never held it.
I just don't find him credible based on everything that he has said. Everything he has done has been wrong. I don't care what degrees he has. There are plenty of derelicts running around the United States throughout our republic that have advanced degrees and can't get anything right. That doesn't mean anything to me, what degree he has from what college he went to. All
that
I know
mean
is
he's good in, that might mean he's good in a laboratory. Curtis said that on your show the other day. It doesn't mean he's a doctor. He doesn't deal with people.
His track record of analysis and modeling, everything he has touched turns into a disaster. So as far as I'm concerned, I don't care what he says. I don't want anything to do with him. When a guy comes on TV, I find them repulsive. Here's the same. He said the same moronic statement. He said, well, you know, we're not going to be able to shake hands again, even though it's a 5,000-year custom since, like, the beginning of time. We're not going to be able to shake hands. You know, that's over. Oh, but if you go on a sex app, it's okay to have sex with a stranger that you don't even know that you meet in Motel 6. You can have sex with a stranger. You just have to assess the risk. But, my God, don't shake hands with people. I mean, the guy's
a
complete and utter moron.
Yeah, it's gonna come back. It's gonna come back. I mean, it's
imbecile. I mean, give me a break with this guy Fauci. Give me a break. Joining us now on the John Frederick Show, live in Kansas, Dave Lindstrom, former NFL player with the Kansas City Chiefs. He's now a candidate. Small businessman. He's also a candidate for U.S. Senate, running in the Republican U.S. Senate primary in Kansas. That'll be decided in an August primary, not a mail-in ballot. You actually get to go and vote. We think in Kansas it'll be that way. And he's probably not the leading candidate right now, but he is with us. He played in the NFL for almost a decade. He was with the Chiefs for 8 of those years. Of course, they won the Super Bowl this year, much to my chagrin, because everybody knows I'm a Tennessee Titans fan. And we did have the lead in that game 2 times, but couldn't contain Mahomes. That guy's like a beast. Anyway, that's in the past. Now we're going to the future. I like my Titans draft picks in this virtual draft or whatever the hell that thing was, but I like our picks. Anyway, joining us now is Dave Lindstrom. Dave, great to have you with us, man.
Well, good to be with you, John. First of all, I wish you and all of your listeners well. I know you're coming from Atlanta. I also want to tell you that my nephew was Atlanta Falcons' first-round draft pick last year.
No kidding.
Yeah, so he's down there with the Falcons and had a great rookie year, and I think he's one of the bright spots for the Falcons in the future.
Oh, that's fantastic. I tell you, obviously he takes after his uncle, and you know it's a big day in that draft. Before we get to politics, what did you think of the virtual draft, Dave?
It was strange. It was certainly strange to see the commissioner in his basement on his easy chair and dealing with the folks via the internet. But I guess that with no sports now, the ratings were higher than any other year.
That's because there isn't anything else to do.
That's what I mean. Yeah. And by the way, I want to thank you for that the bumper music, "Fight for the Right to Party." That seemed to be Travis Kelce's mantra during and after the playoff games. And by the way, the Titans weren't the only team that had a lead on the Chiefs this year. Every team in the playoffs had a lead on the Chiefs this year, and they came back on every single game.
Once Mahomes got going, Tennessee had no answer. They absolutely no answer from him. And I think, you know, one thing it exposed in our offense is that Tannehill's not going to bring you back when you're down by 2 scores in the fourth quarter. I mean, he's not going to do that. So, you know, he's a game management quarterback. They have to rely on the running game. I think they kind of got out of it a bit. But anyway, that's all in the past. I want to get to the future, Dave.
Okay.
You played in the NFL almost a decade, which puts you basically in the top 10% of all NFL players ever for time played. I think 2,700 people have played in the NFL and only 3,000 have gone 9 or over. And you are one of them. Why are you in this U.S. Senate race?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. First of all, I do think that this is not something that was on my bucket list, but I have a passion. I have a passion for my state. I have a passion for my country. I've led a pretty good life, and I want to harken back to something that my mom taught me when we were growing up as a kid. I also have, by the way, five brothers, two of which also played in the pros, with my nephew, and then I have a couple other nephews that probably will get there too. But here's what my mom taught us: to those who much is given, much is expected. I've been blessed in my life, John. I really have. I come from a great family. We didn't have a lot, but we didn't know it. We had everything we needed. I had an opportunity to play in the NFL. I had an opportunity to own my own business. And I've been brought in the state of Kansas, where I think it's among the best places in the world to live, work, and raise a family. So I feel I've been blessed, and it's incumbent upon me, as my mom says, to give back. And I think this is a calling for me. I think it's somewhat providential that I am in this Senate race right now.
All right, well, look, you played in the NFL. You're a small businessman. You serve in government as a supervisor. So you've got that experience. Tell us about your analysis of the Trump administration. Are you a Trump supporter? Do you back his America First agenda? If you get to the Senate, are you going to be a reliable person there that is going to be enthusiastic about the America First agenda going forward?
In one word, John, absolutely yes. Well, two words, absolutely yes. I am a supporter of America First. I also am someone who has a reputation for doing what he says he'll do. And I will be supporting the president. I will be supporting America First policies. I will be supporting security, border security. I will be supporting economic, trying to promote our country. I also will be, one thing that I won't be supporting is I won't be supporting trillion-dollar deficits. Mm-hmm. I ran my business successfully for 25 years, mm-hmm. and I didn't do it by spending more than I take in, which seems to be the standard operating procedure in Washington these days.
You're on the John Fetters Radio Network. We're live in Atlanta this week across America. I'm with Dave Lindstrom, former NFL player, Kansas City Chiefs, 9 years in the NFL. He's in Johnson County, which is a suburb of Kansas City, and he's a businessman there. He was also served a couple of terms on the Johnson County Board of County Commissioners, a thankless job if there ever was one in life. I can tell you that. You deal with those zoning issues forever. It's like going to the dentist, getting your teeth pulled. No Novocaine. Dave, let's talk about your race. And your chairman there, your campaign has criticized GOP Kansas Republican Chairman Mike Kuckelman for trying to pick winners and losers. But there's a primary in August, so who cares what the party chairman says? I mean, either you're going to get enough votes or not.
Yeah, well, that's
why does that matter?
True. Well, it shouldn't matter, and I called out the chairman this week mainly because I thought that he was less than truthful to the media. I reached out to him to try to talk to him like a man and be professional about it, and he didn't return my call until after I actually called him out. And you know, leadership is accepting responsibility for your actions and for the people that you represent. And I was dismayed when the chairman pointed fingers. He did not accept responsibility. He actually was even negative about the potential race going forward and said, if the Republicans lose his seat, he pointed fingers to others and not taking responsibility for himself. And then most importantly, I believe by doing taking the action he took, he doesn't think that Kansas voters are intelligent enough to make their own decisions in this race.
Well, look, whenever you get chairmen of parties, state parties, getting involved in deciding who's going to be their nominee, whether it's underhanded, overhanded, covert, or overt, it's all bad. I mean, the purpose of the party chairman is to build the party and back the nominee, and you let the voters decide who's going to make that choice. Now, in Kansas, it's tough because Chris Kobach's a friend of ours. He's a friend of my show. He's been on my show many times. I thought he was stellar when he was in Kansas serving, and we backed him for governor. But the campaign, the national campaign, the state campaign he had was a disaster. He got crushed, and Kansas went blue. Congressional seats went down with him, and so I'm reluctant to really back him again because I love Chris. I love what he stands for in immigration. He's been a leader. He's been a friend. You know, we did a fundraiser for him over the summer at Steve Bannon's home right by me in Washington, D.C. But he ran for governor. He was a nominee. He got crushed. He destroyed the bottom of the ticket. And so I'm very reluctant, Dave, to go this route again because, you know, sometimes you just have to say, look, whatever I've done, I'm just not going to be helpful here. And so, I mean, I think you guys, first of all, you need to save the seat. And then you got like three or four congressional seats that he took down that I just, why would you go down this path again?
Yeah, well, I don't disagree with anything that you just said. Chris is also a friend of mine. I've known him for a long, long time. I will say this, too. That he has a stellar resume, but he also has a record of mismanaging. And I think the people of Kansas, I've been in this race now about 9 months, and I will tell you unequivocally, the people of Kansas, they are looking for someone who has business experience, someone who's looking to create term limits. They're looking for something else, and we have a poll. We did a poll 2 weeks ago, and that poll unequivocally says that we have a path to victory. And when we let people know who I am, we unequivocally beat both Kobach and Marshall in the race. And so we feel very optimistic about what's going on. Yes, there has been some nefarious things going on with the chairman, but we're taking this one step at a time, and we're just moving forward.
You need a candidate in the U.S. Senate in Kansas who can win. You need a candidate who's going to back President Trump, but you also need a candidate that is going to be able to carry suburban women in 2020 and affect some of these local congressional races. Like I had on my show, I think it was yesterday, Adrienne Foster. I mean, she represents, she's running in a district that is Republican plus 12 that got, and the incumbent there, Yoder, got beat by 10. That's a 22-point swing in 2018. I mean, Kobach was not helpful. And I love him to death, but I think there's a time and a place for everything. I'm not sure that makes sense right now. Let me read a text here I just got in. Mark from Richmond says, Chris Kobach is a polarizing figure. Many people in Kansas or that lived in Kansas like me are not a fan. And, I think that's kind of where I'm at right now. I mean, I respect everything he's done. He's been with us on immigration, but it's just time for change. And hopefully you're going to be able to do that. I want to get to the coronavirus, Kansas. Give us a report. Is Kansas shut down? What is happening? And if you were in the Senate, would you be in favor of getting this economy open?
John, we have to get this economy open. I was a businessman for 25 years, and the business that I was in, they can still partially operate because they have drive-thrus. I was in the restaurant business. And so those folks are hanging on, but that's exactly what they're doing. They're hanging on. There are businesses that had to shutter their doors. And if you had just started a business last year, let's say, and went out and scraped together everything you had to build that business, and all of a sudden every bit of revenue is taken away from you, you're in dire straits. So, yes, we have to get this this economy back open. We have to get the state back open. We're working to that. I don't have all the statistics, that all the information that the governor has, but I'm telling you right now, there's going to be, pretty soon, there will be people in the streets with pitchforks if we don't get this economy open real soon. It's time.
I've been on this all week that I think we need to get football back. I can't imagine going into the fall without football, both NFL, college, and high school, because it's part of culture. It's going to further affect the psyche. It's like I was talking today about, I'm walking around Atlanta, everybody's got a mask on. Well, what the mask does is there's no personal emotion. Like, I just want to go home to see my wife smile. I haven't seen anybody smile because they're all hidden behind a mask or peck, right? And so football's a big part of the U.S. psyche. I think if there's no football, I don't think Trump wins. I just don't. And maybe I'm crazy, but where are we with NFL, college, and high school football? Are we going to get this back in the fall or not?
Yeah, I think we will. I think we will get sports back, not just football, but we'll get sports back. I think what's going to happen is that they won't have as, there's going to have to be some adjustments made as it relates to people in the stands, as it relates to players and participants and coaches and people involved in putting on the sports. I think they're going to have to, life is going to change. Just as in 9/11, security in airports changed, I think coronavirus is going to create a change in our culture. When you walk into a building, maybe there's going to be someone taking your temperature all the time, or seeing whether or not you're feeling well and asking you questions. So I think life will be different. But, yes, I do believe that sports will be back on, and I think it'll be back on soon.
Are we going to see fans at NFL games? Are we going to see virtual TV games? I mean, how do you see that playing out, Dave?
Well, the president of the Chiefs, Mark Donovan, I talked to him when he first came on with the Chiefs probably 8 or 9 years ago. And he mentioned the fact the future of the NFL is studio audiences. They're building stadiums smaller now. They're not the 80, 90,000 seat stadiums. They're building them more in the 50,000 range. And I think that, yes, people will be back, but they'll be back in fewer numbers.
All right, Dave, if people want more information on your campaign, where do they go?
They go to LindstromForSenate.com, LindstromForSenate.com. And we have Twitter, and we also have Instagram. And so, yeah, but LindstromForSenate.com is our website. And I really appreciate you having us on today, John. I really do.
If you get to the U.S. Senate, are you going to hold the Chinese Communist Party accountable for the havoc they've wrought on the world?
Absolutely, yes. Yes, we are. I think people, you earlier in your show, you talked about before I got on there, I heard you talking, and there's no shortage of hypocrisy in politics. There really isn't. Have been successful in my life doing three things: having a positive attitude about what I do, doing exactly what I do, and treating people fairly. And I think the Chinese, if they are, and it appears as if they are, responsible for this virus, they ought to be held accountable.
All right. Dave Lindstrom, thank you for being with us today. Thank you for your time. Thanks for being with me, Dave. Thank you.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you, John.
You're listening to the John Frederick Show. Common sense for the Commonwealth. Online anytime at thejohnfrederickshow.com.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I would not. I feel good. I knew that I would not. Sugar and spice, I feel nice. That sugar and spice, so nice, so nice. I got you.
Talk radio, AM 600. 101.1 FM. WBO.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. President Trump is confident that a weapon that's key to defeating the coronavirus is just around the corner. The president predicting there will be a vaccine for COVID-19 by the end of the year. Mr. Trump spoke this evening during a nationally televised presidential town hall from the Lincoln Memorial. That town hall was carried by Fox News Channel. Also, the president says all of the evidence points to a laboratory in China as the source of the coronavirus, adding that in his opinion, the release of the virus was a horrible mistake. The National Rifle Association has been hard hit by the coronavirus. There have been layoffs, furloughs, as well as some salary cuts because of the virus impact. Reports that dozens of Afghan detainees were tortured by Iranian border guards before being killed. SRN News.
With the coronavirus restrictions, the Prager store warehouse will be unable to ship items for a couple of weeks. So, I want to mention this. If you are wanting to listen to any audio program in the Prager store without waiting for it to be sent to you, let me recommend joining Pragertopia Unlimited. In addition to being able to listen to my radio show commercial-free, Pragertopia Unlimited members can listen to any and all audio programs that are in the Dennis Prager store, over 1,000 hours of streaming audio, almost everything I've recorded over the last 20 years, show segments, talks, lectures, courses, plus you'll have full access to all 5 books of my Torah teachings. It's all on demand. Stream any program, anytime on your phone, iPad, or computer. Plus, everyone who joins Pragertopia Unlimited gets a coupon code for 50% off an autographed copy of the Rational Bible, Genesis. Join Pragertopia Unlimited today. Go to Pragertopia.
How will the weather affect you? WBOB weather.
Look for clear skies throughout the remainder of your Sunday with a low tonight down around 61. Looking into Monday, sunny with a high near 91. Monday night, clear with a low down around 63.
These are unique times, and Jacksonville.radio is standing with you. We provide local, family-friendly radio across multiple formats and frequencies with a diverse and loyal audience. Let us help get your message and your marketing into our communities. Call Jax.radio today so we can discuss how we can help your business. Let us help you get the right message in front of the right audience at the right time. Call 904-74-RIGHT. That's 904-747-4448.
Does your roof need replacing, your house need cleaning, or maybe you're ready to update your kitchen? Big or small, whatever your home improvement need, log on to home.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online resource with instant access to pre-screened remodelers, maids, handymen, painters, and many other home contractors. It's easy and it's free. Just go to home.servicemagic.com. Home.servicemagic.com. That's home.servicemagic.com.
Are you worried about working till you drop, losing your job, or not being able to retire? Lifestyles Unlimited members learn how to leave those worries behind. Tune in to the Del Walmsley Radio Show and discover life-changing information, like the principles we use to provide for our families and run our businesses, why you should have real estate in your portfolio, 5 ways real estate makes you money, and a whole lot more.
Weeknights at 9 on WBOB, AM 600 and FM 101.1. The Answer.
They don't call him the commander of common sense for nothing.
I'm not a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican National Committee, the Democrat National Committee, any campaign or anybody else. So I'm going to call it like I see it.
Guess who got out of the wrong side of the bed this morning?
Make sure to get your big boy pants on. No crybaby diapers.
There's no crying in baseball.
Here on the John Frederick Show.
Let's go to the phone line. And let's get back to Mike in Richmond, who was cut off there at bottom of the hour. Hey, Mike, you're back.
Yeah, John. I'm just want to follow your logic. You're implying that this pandemic that we're dealing with right now has been proven to have come from this work that Dr. Fauci funded in his position. Is that what you're saying?
I don't think there's a person in America except wackos that don't now believe the evidence that this virus was released. It appears accidentally in this Wuhan lab doing bat virus research after we had State Department officials sending cables back to Washington that visited there because we had $7.5 million invested in it of Fauci's decision that it was unsafe and they weren't following protocols and we didn't do anything about it.
And so that's what happened.
Well, that is what is being generally reported by your favorite publication of all time, the fake news, New York Times. So I assume, Mike, you believe the New York Times, you believe CNN, you believe all the fake news. Even the fakers are saying that's how the virus started, in a lab in Wuhan that we funded.
Well, I don't know if you realize this, but I've got the internet too, John, and I was just reading the Newsweek article that you were quoting, and it doesn't say that. You're saying it's that, but that doesn't say that.
I'm giving you my analysis.
Then don't make it's your analysis, but it's not a fact. You're implying that it's a fact, and it's not.
What is secondly, it? Secondly, what is it a fact?
It hasn't been proven that that's where this pandemic came from. As a matter of fact, that article itself says it is possible, but not likely, according to the scientists they interviewed. So you left that part out conveniently. I get it. So, but the part that I would like to ask you, though, about now you're saying, though, that what's going on with masks and all this other things that we're doing to prevent people from being sick is somehow being orchestrated to take Trump down
The whole thing is an orchestration to get Trump out of office right now. When this started, Mike, we were sold on shutting down the greatest economy in the history of the world and putting 30 million people out of work. Here's how we were sold on it, okay? We didn't know what was going to happen. We had modeling. No one knew. And the modeling suggested if we didn't do something, it could potentially overrun our hospital system, and we could run out of beds, and doctors would have to be making life and death decisions about who to treat, like Civil War doctors did with men dying on the battlefield. No American wanted that, including me. So we all went with the 2-week shutdown or whatever it was. Now, there are plenty of beds. That didn't happen. Then we were told, there's not enough ventilators. People are going to die. We need Cuomo. We need 40,000 ventilators. He's got 37,000 sitting now in a warehouse. Now we're giving the ventilators away to other countries. So then we were told ventilators. Then we were told, well, too many people are dying. 2.2 million people are going to die. Then, it's going to be under 100,000. So that goalpost moved, right? So that went down. Then we spent 3 weeks on, we have to flatten the curve. We got to flatten the curve. Oh, my God, we got to flatten the curve. Now the curve is flattened. Now they move the goalpost again. Now they say, well, we need testing. What the hell does testing do? We've got studies now in Stanford and USC that are saying up to a third of the entire country may have this virus. That the IFR or the mortality rate is likely to be between 1 out of 1,000 infected and 3 out of 1,000 infected, on a par with the regular flu. These are studies coming out. Right now, we have destroyed the economy, and you got all these Democratic governors don't want to open their economy up. You know why? They want pain and suffering, no work, depend on the government, beat Trump. There's no more argument to shut this thing down. We have the beds. We have the ventilators. We have now evidence saying that the majority of people have it. Now we're getting evidence coming out and saying actually staying home is prolonging the pain. Sweden did nothing, Mike. And you know what? Their numbers are on a par with every other Western democracy. Now, that doesn't mean you don't protect the vulnerable. I got my 91-year-old mom with us. I don't let anybody come in and talk to her without a mask on. But she's 91 years old. If she gets it, she's highly vulnerable. I'm a 62-year-old healthy male. If I get it, here's what's going to happen. I'll get sick for a week. I'll eat chicken soup. I'll stay in bed a week. I'll be back at work. Get over it.
Yeah, John, I know math is hard, but to state that we had the best economy in the history of the world before this happened.
Absolutely.
Do you know what was the GDP growth rate for the last couple of quarters before
Look, I'm not going to spend 15 minutes debating numbers with you. All I know is everybody had a job. The country was feeling fantastic.
You don't have an argument.
Everybody's stock market was up. Mike, if Mike in Richmond hated the economy, I'm sorry. We had virtually zero unemployment. We had a phenomenal economy. We destroyed our entire means of production for what? For what? Every single model that the experts like Fauci gave us have been wrong. I'm questioning the guy's judgment. I think he's a fraud. I think he's a disaster. He should get fired. And at the very least, he should get off the media. I can't stand the guy. I'm sick of him. And now he made the decision to spend $7.5 million of our money in Wuhan. So why should I pay attention to anything this clown says?
Well, okay, I got a couple of reasons why you should.
And then
I know you do, because you don't want to use data or facts to make this argument. So Fauci graduated number one in his class from Cornell. I've got the internet, John. I can learn. So should I?
The hell do I care what he graduated from? Look, there are millions of people in this world with advanced degrees that have bad judgment. Do you think investing $7.5 million of our money into this Wuhan lab was a good decision after the State Department came back and said protocols weren't being followed? That's fact, right? Do you think that was a good decision?
Hey, John.
Every model this guy gave us, every single model. Oh, and by the way, this is the same guy in a Journal of New England Medicine in March said, hey, we have nothing to worry about. He's quoted. The guy is a complete he's been wrong on everything down the line, and all the Democrats love the guy because all he does is get on TV and say, well, we need to shut everything down until November 5th. November 5th, magically, when Biden wins, it'll be a magic all clear, and everybody will get back to work. Come on, Mike. This whole thing with this guy Fauci, the guy has demonstrated piss-poor judgment over and over and over again. I don't care what he says.
John, let's get to the crux of it. You don't like him because he doesn't kowtow to exactly what the president says. When the president makes these silly, offhanded, riffing comments and he doesn't kowtow to that, that's why you don't like him, because he makes Trump look like the fool and the idiot that he is. That's why you don't like him.
I don't like him because his judgment has proved disastrous. His modeling is disastrous. Everything the guy says is wrong. So why should I pay any attention to him? Meantime, I'm in Atlanta, and here's the problem, right? Here's the problem, Art Laffer. Here's the problem, Steve Mnuchin. I don't care how much money you inject into the economy. You've not dealt with the demand side. There's no demand. People are scared to go out. I'm here in Atlanta. State's open. Stores are empty. The majority of stores aren't even open. Those there are have nobody in them. There's nobody out. Everybody's scared. So we have created this mass hysteria. There's no demand. And now there's a segment of society that says, hey, this socialism thing is not that bad. I get to stay home. The government feeds me. The government's going to take care of me. The government's going to tell me when. The mayor of Roswell goes on CNN, blasts Governor Kemp, what's her name, Lori Henry, and says, well, the government hasn't told me what to do. They haven't told me how many people can be in the restaurant on Main Street. They haven't told me how many people can be outside walking in the park if I open the park. They haven't. I got to get the government to tell me what to do, like the KGB. That's where we're headed, dude.
Well, that's a nice pivot, John, but the one thing I know the government has told me to do is consider...
I'm the master at pivot.
I know you are. But one thing the government has done is to ask me to consider injecting disinfectant into my body. That's one of the things the government
has allowed. You're right about that. That is, I mean, that, look, if he doesn't get rid of these press conferences, and I've been saying for 6 days, Trump's got 2 weeks. 2 weeks. If you get to mid-May and this nonsense is still going on about injecting disinfectants and battling these fake news people at the corrupt White House Correspondents Association, if this goes on for another week, he is not going to win, period. And I've said that over and over and over. He's got 2 weeks to get these people off the air, to get those press conferences gone, and reopen the economy and get people back to work and stop the nonsense. Right now, the White House messaging is Captain Kangaroo Clown Show. It is so bad. It is so ridiculous. I've never seen anything in a communications department that screwed up. I'm not sure that Kayleigh McEnany, who's a friend of mine, she's a great press secretary. You need somebody in there to fix the communications in that place, because it is an unmitigated catastrophe. It's a clown show.
Well, they need to get the comb over in chief to shut his trap about things he knows nothing about. That's what they need to do. Let's face it. He's opening his mouth about things he knows nothing about. He's convinced he knows something about everything, and he doesn't.
All I want Trump to be talking about is how we get 35 million people back to work. Anything other than that, he shouldn't be talking about it. There's no question the guy understands small business. He understands business. He understands the economy. That should be the message, how we get this economy back to work. That's it. That's all I'm interested in.
Right back to that great 2% GDP growth rate. That's exactly what we want to have, is all that great growth, John.
We had full employment.
Yeah.
Wages were up.
Yeah.
We had the best economy in the history of the United States that we had ever had. All that now wiped out in 3 weeks. Unbelievable. Mike, I got a roll. John Frederick's Radio Network. Always good to debate you, Mike. And thank you for recognizing I am the master pivoter of all time. Joining me now is Jim Stormont. He's the president of Avalon Hotel here and this beautiful place that we have. And Jim, welcome.
Thank you very much, John. Happy to be here.
Now, your staff has been fantastic. Stephanie and Catherine, they've been excellent. Your overnight people getting us everything that we need for everybody that comes in and escorting them up. So I really want to give your staff here a big shout out. They've been fantastic to work with.
Well, thank you. They are incredible, and we really appreciate the folks that have stayed and are working with us, keeping this our baby alive. We call this hotel our baby, and it's been a tragic period of time for a lot of businesses and for us, but we've gone from 228 employees down to about 10, so it's a shame, and we're looking forward to the day we can get the balance of our staff back on, engaged, and working with us in beautiful Avalon.
So, Avalon Hotel, you have gone from 228 employees to 10.
That's it.
That's down 218.
We are down 95%+ in revenues, and you just can't pay people when you don't have revenues.
How do you survive, Jim?
Well,
because you've got lease payment, right? Mario, this is a huge facility, and you own the hotel, right? And everything in it.
Right. My obviously
the restaurant, the bars, everything.
I have lots of partners, of course, but one of my partners is Mark Toro in North American Properties, who is the master developer of all of Avalon, but he's a partner in the hotel itself, along with institutional investors and lenders, and it was a large-scale development when we opened. We started construction in 2016, opened in 2018, was arguably, but I believe, the most successful hotel in the metropolitan area of Atlanta, and doing extremely well when this all hit. And So, you know, it's when you have to remove 95% of your employees on a furlough temporarily, it is tough to survive. We've got mortgage, we've got all the typical utilities and labor costs, and but we're trying to, we're making our way through it, and we have a plan to survive as long as the economy starts coming back and people start traveling more and the fear subsides a little. I think we're going to ride it through.
We were talking earlier, Jim, about the fear factor. My first day in Georgia coming from Washington, D.C., where we're in total lockdown, I guess my anticipation was it would be a little bit different. I kind of saw the same thing. Everybody's got a mask on. One of my guests that I had to dinner with, I saw him, gave him a hug. People looked at me like I was a leper or something. I got a bunch of dirty looks. A restaurant that fits 300 people had six people in it at 6 o'clock. And a couple restaurant owners I talked to, sorry to get your take on this, said they can't afford to open. They can't afford to open. They have to spend money to get the food in. They have to replenish their liquor, so they can't afford that. Plus, they said they can't find workers because everybody's getting unemployment.
Yes, those are lots of issues you just brought up right there.
As a business owner whose revenues are down 95%, how does this work now?
Well, that is, you pointed out the exact challenge, that we're going to lose more money when we start opening because you have to staff up. Before the demand is back, and we close down our restaurant and our bar and our catering and banquet operations, and like you said, to get the purchasing people back, the chefs, the general managers, the servers, all these people coming back, and if you only get six people coming into the restaurant, you know, you're losing more money than if you weren't open. And even if you have, you know, restaurant business is a very low margin business, and food and beverage. And if you're barely covering your cost when you're full. So if imagine that even if you opened up and you had 50% of your demand and revenues, you're probably losing money. So how do we go from here to there is the big question. And I agree with you on this fear factor. I want to comment on that because I think I have maybe a unique perspective, and I'm going to try and describe it to you. Having a pandemic in the era of internet, last 20 years we've had this internet era, and everyone can look at anything they want on the internet to confirm their beliefs. And I am a strong believer of confirmation bias. So people go to the internet and they seek out information that supports their already preconceived notions, and then it amplifies those notions. And people also don't relate to the large numbers. So when they see a certain number of people dying, or they see numbers around the world or around the country of the number of deaths, it is very scary. But I think the fear factor is irrationally higher than the numbers would indicate. You know, I just looked yesterday that, you know, I have a 0.3%, based on my age and my, you know, male 62-year-old, I have a 99.7% chance of not dying.
Just over influenza. Just over the flu, which is one out of 1,000. We got three studies now showing that it's somewhere between 1 out of 1,000 and 3 out of 1,000. And the 3 out of 1,000 includes the aged and the vulnerable. So if you take those out, over 65, compromised health, like I tell this story every day. My mom now lives with us. She's 91 years old, just got out of rehab, broke her hip, needs care. I don't let anybody come and see her without a mask on because if she gets sick, it's over, right? I mean, dead. Right, so you have to be smart about it. But I'm 62, but I'm a healthy young fella, right? Like Brandon Beach. If I get sick, I'm going to be in bed for a week. I'm going to drink chicken soup, have hot tea. I'm going to get over it. I'm going to get my tail back to work. The fear is irrational, and those numbers are not getting out. Former Speaker Mark Burkholder said something to me last night at dinner, and I just want to share this, and then I'm going to go to word from our sponsors. He said, you know, the problem is we're now experiencing what socialism is. Stay home, get money. And he said the problem is some people really like it.
Well, thanks, John. I wanted to add one more comment. And first of all, thank you very much for being at the Hotel at Avalon. It's a beautiful hotel, and we are open. We decided definitively we're not going to close. A lot of hotels closed, even though we're funding Red Ink right now, and we're losing money. But we are open because we want to be prepared to open more fully and get life back to normal as soon as we can in a healthy, moderated way. And I think as long as the hospitals and the medical facilities are getting enough support from the financial support they need and the supplies they need, that's where the primary source of money should be going. But we've got to get back to business and start this economy back up.
You're listening to The John Frederick Show, Common Sense for the Commonwealth. On great radio stations across Virginia and online anytime at thejohnfrederickshow.com.
May 2nd, 1945. The end is near for World War II in Europe. The Soviet Union announces the fall of Nazi Germany's capital, Berlin. And the Allies announce the surrender of Nazi troops in Italy and parts of Austria. 1519, Leonardo da Vinci, the Italian Renaissance artist who painted The Last Supper and the Mona Lisa, dies in France at age 67. 1863, during the Civil War, Confederate General Thomas Stonewall Jackson is accidentally wounded by his own men at Chancellorsville, Virginia. Jackson dies 8 days later. 1994.
Now is the time for celebration, for South Africans to join together to celebrate the birth of democracy.
Nelson Mandela and the African National Congress claim victory in South Africa's first multiracial election. Mandela, who spent nearly 30 years in prison under apartheid rule, becomes the country's president. 1972. J. Edgar Hoover, who ran the FBI from the Prohibition era through the turbulent 1960s, dies in Washington, D.C. at age 77. And 1903.
Would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar.
Singer and actor Bing Crosby, one of the 20th century's most popular entertainers, is born in Tacoma, Washington. Today in history, May 2nd. Sandy Kozell, The Associated Press.
John Frederick.
We're only measuring one side of the equation, the virus side. There's a little ticker with how many people have the virus, how many people have died from the virus. We get that. It's bad. It's sad. There needs to be a complementary chart showing how many people are unemployed, losing their homes, treated for alcoholism, drug abuse, family abuse, domestic violence, all of that.
Stay connected online and take them wherever you go. To get the free John Frederick Show app, follow on Twitter at JF Radio Show.
We got to open this economy back up.